This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks. 97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fay. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah. Any Saturday, especially in the fall, you know, you got the change of seasons coming. We're a few weeks away from Halloween, and it seems like this is the time of year where time actually speeds up.
Well, it speeded up because here we are in October, and my mind is 2 or 3 months back.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just not quite ready. I guess I need to get more involved in fall.
Yeah.
Because I just haven't quite got ready. Well, let me give out the phone number.
Okay.
Phone number is 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And this is all about growing your money so that you can retire happy, wealthy, and early. How many people on average would you say actually go ahead and retire early as opposed to like more like an average on time type of time span?
Well, all the ones of mine that have retired lately were all about 59 years old.
Really? So that is early.
It was. So I was pretty proud of them that they were able to do that. And then we've got other people that are not retiring until like 67, 68, because they like what they do. But I can't say that everybody. Everybody does not like what they do. A lot of people have worked for one company all these years. They never switched. I talked to one of my clients the other day, and I said, well, how long have you worked for this company? He said 37 years.
Wow.
I never changed. And, there's a lot of people that way. They just, whatever they want to pay them, they just take it all those years. And they don't ever say, I wonder if I could switch and make more money. They're happy. They're contented. They work for plants as the manager. And they just raise their kids on that salary. And they don't get the big bonuses everybody else gets. But they're happy.
Well, yeah, and I read these studies all the time, and it really goes back many years, back to business 101, back to the core basics, that if you have a great environment that's full of positive energy and positive people, you have a certain caliber of not only employees but management, and people are end up, they're very, very happy there, and those are the most productive employees. And a lot of times environments like that trump titles or salaries or bonuses. It's the entire environment. So I can see why people would want to stay in situations like that. The money will take care of itself if you do it right and you do it smart, and that's what we're going to lay out here. But yeah, I can see people, because if you retire too early, and you've seen this as well, if you retire too early, you leave that great, wonderful environment, and then you kind of just are a little bit lost.
That's right. And I think that's why those people retire early. They've been with that one company, and they are tired.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tired of the company, the management, and themselves. They just want to relax and go home. And so, yes, when you ask that question, that is true. And then we have the other company, people that have worked for several different companies, and they've gotten paid more each time they made a change. So that's a different kind of employee rather than the ones that are going to retire early because they've just been with one company and they're tired.
Yeah.
They want to go do something else. But it works out both ways. I think the people that make the most money is the ones that have made a lot of changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they get the better bonus. I've got people making bonuses over $100,000.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and then I've got people making small bonuses, and that's because it's a different type of company. And those people don't make as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they work a pretty good salary, but they don't get that big bonus. And I've got people this year that are making, you know, $275,000, and then they're going to get that big bonus. So that's going to make them, you know, really noticeable. And, of course, everybody right now has got a job. I don't know a soul that's not employed. I don't know anybody that's not making, you know, really good money. And I expect this to go on a long time.
Yeah, it looks like this trend, especially here in West Texas, is going to last for a while because of that major
fine between Lubbock and Midland.
Yes.
It's a huge, huge field.
Like the biggest one anywhere, and they're going to be tapping that for years.
I think that'll be a 20-year project.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, of course, as we talk about that sand that they discovered was the right kind for fracking,
uh-huh.
And that is a big find. Those people are going to make $1 billion.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about selling that sand and how much money even that is worth.
That's right. It's worth lots and lots. And there's trucks running that sand every minute of the day.
Yeah.
And the people who are driving the trucks are making a lot of money.
Now, what about people who are not in the oil industry? Because I know there's a lot of residents who have been here in Midland, Odessa, and Big Spring and surrounding areas for really their whole lives who are not in the oil field business. They may work at an office. They may own a store of some kind. There are several people here who are not in oil field business. But even those types of avenues and businesses, they're still feeling the effects of the booming economy because people that are working in the oil field, they got all this extra money, there's all these extra people, and they got to go spend it someplace. And hopefully they're spending it on these different businesses in the area.
Oh, I believe they are, because we're so far from a major retail place, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not close to Dallas, they're not close to Houston, San Antonio. So yes, I think most of the dollars do go back in the economy here. I don't think they're rushing around to the other big metropolitan cities, you know, to shop. I think they probably come to Dallas once a year.
Yeah.
Hopefully, right now, because it is fair, and, you know, it runs 28 days, so everybody has to get their children to the fair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that. And now talking about the economy, that brings in a huge, huge amount of money. People don't realize it's not only the fair, but it's the hotels. It's the big restaurants where they go at night to eat. You know, it's just a huge a boom to the economy in Dallas, you know, when the fair comes every year. And there'll be so many people at that fair. It's just a huge, huge number. And they spend a ton at the fair. And, of course, all that goes back into the economy.
Yeah.
So the fair is one of the best things I think Texas has. I really do.
It really is. It's massive. It's long. You have those fairs sometimes that last 3 days, and it's just not big enough to draw the crowds. One, it's great for some local people, but you know, I mean, it's local dollars staying in the local region, which is fine. It's great, but it's even better when you can get a big, what'd you say, 28 days.
You get a
big fair like that and draws people from, you know, the entire state. And Texas is huge. So that's great for the economy over there, because like you say, there's all the peripheral businesses, the hotels, the restaurants and things like that. But then again, you know, a lot of people stay here in West Texas on the weekends and things like that. They're buying cars. They're buying trucks. They're buying homes. They're buying they're renting apartments. They're going to restaurants. They're going shopping for things. You know, we got the holidays coming up, and we know how it is as we go into fourth quarter. That's when people are really looking to spend that money. And this is a time of year where I guess probably it might be a good idea to maybe instead of spending like, I don't know, take a small percentage, say, of your holiday budget and maybe start putting it towards retirement. Maybe just a little less on holiday shopping and a little more for investing, I guess, in your own future.
Well, and this is true. If you blow all your money before retirement just because you want to live that extravagance, it's going to hurt when you get ready to retire.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is, with our customers, most of it is IRA money. They can't get to it until they retire, and they're thankful for that because they don't want to pay that huge fee, and they don't want to pay the taxes on it. So the best thing to do is to roll your money, keep rolling it, and make that money, and then you will be ready for retirement, and you'll have a good interest income to live off of, and you won't ever get in your principal. So if a person plans right, they can retire a few years early and with more money than what they were expecting.
I know you talk to a lot of different types of people. You got a wide variety of clients who come over and invest in life insurance policies and plan for their retirement. Do you find that many people have to be basically protected from themselves because they'll go ahead and spend it, or are people pretty much, once they get into the mode of, okay, we're going to invest, we're going to put this much in, we're going to start investing, we're going to plan for the future, once they get into that mindset, are they pretty much really easy with the process, or do they still need to protect themselves?
Yes, I think they are. Then they know what their goals are, they know what year approximately they're going to retire, and they know how much money they're going to need. And once they realize how much they're going to need, they're pretty good about it. Once we start a program, about keeping it going, not getting into it, and just rolling that money over. And it works pretty good. I mean, we've had an awful lot of people that did retire early last year, and I don't know how many at the end of this year will retire, but I think they're very good, and they're being frugal. Now, the people that come to us with a small amount of money, maybe $150,000, we know that they haven't done a good job investing. We know that they've been spending it as they went. Now, most of my clients, when they walk in the door, their homes are paid for. And that's the first big thing they need to have gotten out of the way, was having the home paid for. And that way, it's just saving for retirement. We're not trying to pay off any debt. They don't have a big amount of debt. Most of the people that I know have very, very little debt. And that really helps them when it comes to retirement. So the money they're putting in it, it's going to be coming back to them in a bigger way. So they're excited about that. They're excited about maybe being able to retire early and not have to work quite as hard. And the people that retire, they're just having fun, let me tell you.
What would be, because you mentioned most people have very little debt, what would be a good, limit on what kind of debt you want to go into? Credit cards, auto loan, or is that too much?
Most of the people owe very little on their credit cards, and they pay it off every month, which is a good thing. That tells you that they're healthy, credit-wise and financial. If they have a big credit card, $50,000 or more, they've got to get that paid down before they can do almost anything. I mean, they've let it get too high. If they come in and they still owe $300,000 on a house and they're 60, they're in a little bit of trouble. They've got to get that son of a gun paid off before they retire. You don't want to retire and have any debt. Never. And the only time they have a new car, a new pickup, it's just a short-term deal. They may owe on it 2 years or three, and they'll have it paid off, and they're going to keep that pickup a long time. All of our clients, their pickups, I have somebody with a lot of money, a lot of assets. His pickup is 10 years old.
Cool.
He's that frugal.
And it probably drives great, too. He probably takes great care of it.
He takes good care of it. It looks new on the outside, even though it's got 250,000 miles.
Cool.
But he says it's a great pickup, and he loves it.
I'm sure it's kind of like an old pair of jeans. The older they
get, you don't want to give them up.
Yeah.
And a guy that is content with that, he's saving money very well for retirement.
So what would you say to somebody who they're on the road, they're in that right mindset, but say they owe, $50,000, $75,000 on their house, so they've paid for several years, they've been responsible with it, they've gotten their credit card debts down to a reasonable level or even eliminated it altogether. How would you, somebody comes in, say they're 55, mid-50s, come in and talk to you. So they say, okay, here's the deal. We owe just a little bit left on the house. Can you get them to that point where they can actually get that debt off the plate and then start getting ready for retirement? Is that something that's in the scope?
Sure, it's a doable deal. And lots of times I'll say, okay, don't go ahead and pay cash for the house now because you're close. Just go ahead and make the payments. Let's take the 401k money and start doing it, and because it's not going to hurt them. Like the payment's like $200 a month. You know, it's not a big enough deal to worry about right now. If they had a payment of $2,000, I might be questioning it. You know, like get that thing out of the way. But no, if they just have a small amount of debt, you know, like they probably owe $50,000 on the house. That's nothing. And just go ahead and for a couple of years, you know, get their investments started, getting the income started, because that's the important thing. You've got to have income when you retire to live on. So they've got to get right on that. And so they can do both if they have just a small amount of debt.
Okay. And I know there's like 1,000 different scenarios, and everybody's situation is a little bit different. So obviously they want to come in and talk to you for a customized plan. But, you know, I know we talk about, you know, how much debt people should or shouldn't have as they go into retirement. And I know that a lot of people realistically may not be completely debt free. I know there's a lot that are, but there are those that are very, very close. And I wasn't sure, you know, where that line was as far as, you know, oh my gosh, you're in way over your head, you're underwater, you're drowning, or, you know, hey, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Let's go ahead and let's take this pile of money and let's do this with it. Let's take this 401k and let's pay this down and let's take this, let's roll it over and start investing. You can map all that out for people.
That's right. We would map it out and say, okay, here's how long it's going to take. Here's what we need to do to get it started and to get the income coming in, because you're going to have income. You know, you don't want to get into your principal and see that principal just going down when you retire, and you're going, how am I going to live? I'm into the principal already. You do not want to get into your principal. You want to use your interest income to live on. Then you'll have a very good life, and you'll be happy the rest of your life. And nobody wants to go back to work. I don't care who they are. Once they've left, everybody wants to have a good life, and they want to travel a lot, see the grandchildren, see the Grand Canyon, you know, everything. And they just don't want to start over, I can tell you that. I wouldn't even talk about it. You know, things like that can happen, you know.
So have you ever seen anybody that's actually, they thought they were ready and they misjudged, and as it turns out, they weren't ready and had to go back to work at like 70-something?
We have, and they're local people. And one of my clients came in and told me about it. They said, these people live next door to us. And in 08, you know, when everything left and it was so sad, these people didn't make the recovery everybody else made. They never got their money back. And so they had had such a bad time, the husband and wife talked it over and said, we've got to go back to work. And now that is a bad, bad deal when you have to go back to work. And like you said, they were in their 70s. And they had no choice. They're going to have to work for the next 10 years. They'll be 80 years old when they get enough money they can actually retire.
Wow.
And it won't be as much money probably as they had before. I didn't know the people, but my client said they live right next door to them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a very sad situation. And I know there was other people. And I had people that it took them 8 years to recover from 08.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had people, when it first happened, I had people come in tears because it was so bad. They'd lost so much.
Well, you know what,
so
they say,
they had to really just clamp down, no money.
Oh, yeah. I you know, you hear stories all the time about people who had been through the Depression in 29. And so, you know, they tell these stories about how, you know, geez, you know, we literally lost everything, and that lesson never left them, and they remained frugal for the rest of their lives, whether they were ever, you know, recovered back to a place where they could retire, you know, healthy, happy, and worry-free. It's debatable. I mean, that changes with every person, but they never lost that lesson of, my gosh, we need to be frugal, we need to watch our pennies, we need to make every dollar count, we need to be wise with our money. And so, do you think that the 08 scenario is one of those that is similar to the Great Depression?
It's not near as bad, but people, it sure got their attention. And when they saw that half of their money was gone, they were in a sheer panic. I mean, they really were. And I have some clients that have since passed away that were here during the Depression, the Great Depression. And they had to, you know, sacrifice so much. They were farmers, and that saved them. You know, the farmers didn't have it as bad as everybody else because, you know, they had pigs, they had cows, they had horses, and they were able to survive, and people in cities didn't, as you know. They were on the WPA. They were in bread lines and soup lines. So everybody said to themselves, never again. I do not want to ever have you know, no food and no money, like they did in the big cities. So all these years, you could talk to anybody that had been through that, and they didn't spend money on anything. This client and his wife of mine made very good money. They were worth $4 to $5 million, but they would not spend a dime. And she'd say, well, I just can't afford a dress. I mean, that's the way she felt about it. And they had a wreck in their Cadillac. And she said, oh, no, I'll have to get a used car. In fact, I want to get a little car. And I said, no. I mean, as old as you are, you need a big car where if you hit somebody, it won't hurt you, you know?
Yeah.
And but they bought a used Cadillac. They would not buy a new one. That's how frugal they were. And all the years I knew them, I never saw them go and do anything extravagant. They ate at Dairy Queen every week. They loved Dairy Queen. I mean, you know, that was where they ate. And I'd audit their credit cards for, and I'd see every week, there's those Dairy Queen, you know. And I never knew them to go to a nice restaurant. And all the years I knew them, I don't believe they ever did.
Do you find people have forgotten 2008? Or is it still fresh on their mind?
I think it's fairly fresh. They've forgotten how bad it was, but I think they still have a vivid memory of what can happen.
Because I think that really goes to the approach that people take towards retirement, towards saving money, towards building wealth, as opposed to, you know, just this carefree, you know, free-for-all kind of, you know, lifestyle where people just kind of spend whatever on anything. And I think if people remember, like actually remember the effects, they can still feel the emotion, they can still remember what it was like in 2008 to you know, wake up and all of a sudden, my goodness, everything is gone. And we have to restart 20 years of building wealth and saving. We have to start all over. And I think that if people can remember that, it will really kind of kickstart you know, this process of hey, we need to really buckle down and we need to be smart with our money. And if they have forgotten, maybe it's good to take a few minutes and just go back and remember. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, because as time goes by, some of those emotions kind of go away and we kind of, you know, we lessen the severeness of it. And so maybe it's good a good time to just think about it for a minute, remember what had happened, and let this be the catalyst. Because you talk all the time about how people procrastinate.
They do. I mean, that's just part of our life. But I find that the older they get, they suddenly say, we do not need all of our money in the stock market. We're going to put some of it with faith. We don't want it all at risk, and because they know what can happen. And especially if you're getting ready to retire in the next 4 or 5 years, you do not want to take the risk of losing $1.
Yeah.
You know, you've worked all your life for this money. And so, you know, you don't want to go out here and do something outlandish, and you don't want to put it all in metals, you know, that you could lose it all in about 15 minutes, you know. So they have to be cautious. They have to think about it, and they have to say, can we leave it in the stock market if we're this near to retirement? Or can we take it out and put it in something that we know what we'll make, you know? And we know just about how long it's going to take to make this money. And, you know, half of it comes in early. Half of it may be late, maybe a fourth late. But, you know, you figure all that out in the beginning. There'll be so many that's going to come in, so many that'll be late. And when it comes in early, that makes you that extra money because it came in 12 months or 16 rather than 24. You know, and everybody's heard me say this many times. The 27 month is probably my favorite. And I like the 30 months because we've had several 30 months ones that came in early. So I figure it's worth it to have maybe one in your portfolio. You don't need a bunch of 30 months, but to have at least one. And then every time a 30 month becomes due, do one more because that 30% is sure looks good when it comes in 12 or 14 months.
So in other words, to break it down, to simplify things, when you take like a 27 or a 30-month policy, you've got some room there to work with. There's plenty of wiggle room. You still get the 27 or 30% on the policy, but the odds of it coming early are much better than, say, with like a 12-month policy.
Well, yeah, a 12-month one, it may come in 6 months, you know.
Sure.
Or 8 months, because that tells you that person's near death. And then on a 30-month, I've had two that I know of personally that have come due this year and came due really early. And I studied and studied it to see if I thought that person was a lot sicker than what they were saying to me. And I determined that they were and I bought the policy. And on both of them, we were lucky. They came in and less than a year. So it tells us that somebody missed something in that evaluation, or there was something in them that you could not see, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps all the CT scans, somebody didn't read them real good. And they did come in. It was a type of cancer that was pretty progressive. So you have to know about all that. You have to work it. And you've got to study the policies, which we try to do every day. And, of course, as I said last week, we're closing on about $2 million worth of policies. We bid over 30, and there's $2 million. We're getting the papers done, getting it closed. And we'll try to have those papers out to everybody Monday or Tuesday.
So now there's a bunch of opportunity to invest coming up in the very, very near future.
Yes, we've already won the policies. We're just waiting on a back piece on a couple of the contracts. Sometimes when they send us the contracts, they don't get it all together. They miss something, so we have to wait for that other page and get it signed. But those policies are ready to go, and we're going to get those out as quick as possible. It's about $2 million.
That's not
bad.
So
that'll be a good thing. Yeah, that's not bad at all. And we've got more coming that we have won that we don't have the contracts back yet.
So how did it look this past week with policies to bid on and things like that? Was there a bunch out there?
Not as much as usual, but we have so much other that we bid on. It was all right because we've got a lot to get closed and to get everybody in.
So it's probably a good time to have less to bid on because you have so many that you've got. You're waiting on a document here that you've already been awarded. And as soon as the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, you can get those filled. And that's a really good chunk of a change.
Yes, it is. And the whole thing will be a lot when we get them all closed, okay?
Perfect. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to that charming Ivy Cottage.
So every Saturday morning we get into trivia, and sometimes it's something we may not put on our bucket list. Maybe it's something that we need to go see, maybe something we need to experience Maybe it's just some knowledge about Texas. So what are we talking about today?
All right. We are talking about a guy years, years, years ago from Texas that invented some plows. It's an interesting little story. This is the 175th anniversary of the birth of Ole Ringnes. He was born in Norway, and he was a mail carrier, and his family settled in Bosque County down there. He invented the disc plow and the disc harrow. And, I mean, can you imagine? 175 years ago he was born, and he noticed a warped wheel on one of his wagons, and he was moving large amounts of mud. So this old guy made a model of the disc plow in his father's blacksmith shop, but never had his invention patented. In July of 1872, he went to Washington, D.C. He was going to present his case for a patent. And he died under very mysterious circumstances. In other words, somebody murdered him. And he reached the patent office, and it later contacted his family to say his patent had been approved. And apparently these people didn't find the patent information on him when they killed him. And they said, we're going to grant you the patent as soon as you pay the fee. Well, back then, his family did not realize what he had done. So they declined the offer.
No.
So Ringnes' patent was never done. He was never given a patent. And can you imagine? A plow company, years later, took his invention and got it patented.
Wow.
Can you imagine this happening? It's just like a lot of other things. And, you know, Eli Whitney applied for a patent for the cotton gin 225 years ago, October 28th, 1783. Okay? He was granted the patent in March of 1794. Now, how many people know that Texas leads the nation in cotton?
Are you serious?
It leads the whole nation. Last year, we produced $1 billion in cotton.
Wow!
A $1 billion industry. Another thing right here in Texas. $1 billion, which I would not have believed.
Wow.
I mean, it's just...
I would have thought maybe the leader was down by, you know, one of those states down along the Gulf Coast, like over in that region.
See, I thought Mississippi because I've always heard so much about Mississippi cotton.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that that was where all the cotton, you know, was being pulled, and that is not true at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was just in shock. And who do you think started cotton in Texas?
I'm not sure.
The Spanish missionaries.
Oh, see, now I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, the Spanish missionaries is the ones who came here and planted cotton.
Huh.
So that's how long in this country that we've had cotton in Texas.
I didn't realize it went back that far.
It does. Well, anyway, let me tell you about all the things that's happening in Texas for October.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, we have so many things. Okay, we've got Oktoberfest in Emory. We've got the Fall Fish Fry in Stonewall. We've got the Wiener Fest in College Station. That's a big deal. And we've got the Bullfrog Fest in Lake Worth, over here by Fort Worth. Beaumont's having an Oktoberfest. Big deal coming down the pike. And Burnet, Texas. The Catholics are having a big fall fest there. And Caldwell, again, a big fest. Tyler, the horse show starts on the 11th in Tyler. And we've got, you know, we think that everything ends in September, you know, but it doesn't. And there's a big art deal going on in Padre Island. And Woodville, their harvest festival in Woodville, will be the 19th and 20th. Most of this is going to be about the 19th. and Liberty Hill. They're having a harvest festival. And it's just amazing. All the things. Georgetown is having a big deal. And then Wimberley, Texas, where everything happens, as we always talk, is having that harvest fest in Kerrville. And then, by the time all this is over, everybody will have seen all the pumpkins in every county, every city that I've named. Those are going to have big pumpkin deals going on. And these women come out, and they have all kinds of food to eat made out of pumpkins.
Wow.
Harvest Fest is about fall and pumpkins. And they have a lot of recipes they're going to share with people in those little towns. And they even make a pumpkin flan.
Ooh, that sounds good. Pumpkin flan.
Does that sound good?
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. And they make it, you know, with small pumpkins. Has all this cream in it. Oh, my gosh. It's got just almost everything in the world in it. But I was shocked at how many things they come out with just for October. And then they're giving one of the towns is having a big contest to see who can make the best pumpkin recipe, and they're giving $100 out for that.
Ooh, that'd be good to be a taste tester at.
That's what I was thinking, too. They need some. They need pumpkin testers, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Because in these small towns, these women can cook, as you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're some of the best in the world. And when they come out with all this, these people, I don't know how many judges. I think they usually have five. And those judges judge all that. Then they get to eat all of it.
Of course.
So you know, it works out pretty good.
That's the best part of the whole thing. He's eating it.
Yes. And, you know, throughout Texas, we have all these Texas co-ops. And that means that all the people in those counties actually own the electric company. And there's they have recipes every month. And they're always giving out all these checks to these women for their recipes. And that goes back years and years and years. That all these people share all these recipes, and everybody gets to go and taste their new things, and you know, they have everything in the world. As I said, the flan is one of my favorites, but they have pumpkin soup with cilantro. I mean, they have everything they can think of that you could make with a pumpkin.
Well, see, and I've never heard of pumpkin flan, and initially, and I would have probably said, if I didn't know any better, I would probably say, ew, that sounds nasty, but I actually think it actually sounds really good. I love pumpkin soup. You wouldn't think that would be good either, but that is delicious.
Well, and it warns these women, do not be trying to use canned pumpkins.
Oh, no.
I mean, you know, here they're laying it out. You better be using the real thing, ladies.
Yeah.
And as I said, they've got all these contests for them to see who can make the best recipe out of a pumpkin.
Wow.
And then they have a recipe for a stuffed pumpkin. And you have to have a little 4-pound pumpkin, and you stuff it with all this great stuff and fancy cheese. And, man, that ought to be a winner right there.
Ooh, wow. You stuff cheese inside a pumpkin?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Never even heard of that. It sounds delicious.
It's Swiss, white cheddar, Grand cheese, and menthol. Now, I don't know that cheese.
I don't know.
But it takes heavy cream,
ooh,
you know, chicken stock,
oh,
kosher salt.
Oh, my goodness.
You have to have a little bit of cayenne pepper in it.
Mm.
Yes, and a little bit of nutmeg in it.
Oh, a little smoky sweetness, but still a little bit of nutmeg for the fall and the harvest. Oh, my gosh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it's called the Great Pumpkin. Oh. And you make a little individual 4-pound pumpkins and stuff them. And with all that great cheese and cream and chicken broth, and, I mean, it's just, this is the time of year that everybody needs to do all that, you know?
Yeah.
And all these great cooks are cooking it, and these small towns, they're all getting to taste all that. And, you know, that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, it is. Oh, my
gosh. And who would have known that you could make that many things out of a pumpkin?
I had no idea you could make that many things. I mean, I thought, you know, okay, I've heard of pumpkin soup. I've heard of pumpkin pie, obviously. But, boy, I bet people get real creative with pumpkin-type recipes. And this is the time of year where you have, you know, the pumpkin, and then you have the cinnamon and all the spices that start to come into play. And all that bleeds right into Thanksgiving and then holiday food. And, man, this is a great – it really lasts, what, about 2.5 months or so, I'd say.
That's right. And everybody will be picking out on all this food. And come January, they're all going to say, well, how do I get it off?
Yeah. Exactly. But we don't worry about that in the middle of November. We're going to think about that in January.
That's exactly right. Don't worry about it now because you know you're going to do it.
Yeah.
So you might as well just enjoy it and then do it later. But I know that I love visiting the pumpkin patches. That's just one of my big deals.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go out there and pick out one, and then my grandchildren go with me, and what they do is each one will buy their own pumpkin. They'll say, Mimi, can I have a pumpkin? Well, of course you can. And so we come back with a lot of pumpkins.
I bet.
And, they love their pumpkins. And I guess that's just part of growing up, everybody has to have a pumpkin.
Oh, yeah. You have to have a pumpkin. You have to have apple cider. You have to have, whether it's cold or hot apple cider, you have to have all of it.
Well, the only thing that I don't really like to do is making the jack-o'-lantern. It's hard to do.
It is.
Cutting that out is hard.
Yeah.
But we always get some hay. We put the jack-o'-lantern on top and then put some other pumpkins out there. And it's just a sight to behold to have that much fun.
Yeah, it really is. It's a time for special memories where you can gather with like your family and friends and really just kind of just have some peaceful fun and create memories.
And I can remember as a child that we were in the wagon. They'd take us down there, the tractor in the wagon, and let us, you know, pick out pumpkins. And I remember the ride back and hey, how much fun it was.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I remember having, like, the Halloween costume contests, and then when you were done, you'd have the little donuts and then the apple cider and the whole thing.
And we would dunk for apples.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, you have to have a lot of fun. And, you know, we talked a couple of times about apples being grown in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's over here at Roanoke, Texas, right here close. And those people grow everything in the world. It's probably the last of their kind. The husband is 80. The lady's in her 70s. And this farm has everything you want to see. Oh, my gosh.
I bet.
Yes. They have butterflies. They have the apple orchard, which is wonderful. They have jellies that they make right there on the farm. They even had sugar-free. They had all kinds of vegetables. They grew okra. They showed the children, you know, how all these vegetables work, you know, out in the garden. And they had carrots that were growing. And these children just went crazy. You know, they all think everything comes from a grocery store. I mean, they don't know that things grow out in the ground.
Surprise!
That's right. And they had beautiful chickens.
Mm.
They had beautiful chickens. And they had a chicken that was half turkey and half chicken.
Really?
And I'd never seen one.
I've never even heard of such a thing.
I hadn't either. And I forgot what it was called, but they had them. And I think, you know, it all goes back to our childhood. There's just not a place like this anymore where you can go out and be educated and educate your children and grandchildren and see them growing, you know, all these many things that they grow.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an impressive sight because it's one of the few farms that I know where you can go and get an education.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful little trip, and I hope those people stay in business a long time, but I'm afraid they won't be.
Oh, no.
I think it's an end of an era because of their age.
Oh, no. They're not going to pass it on to other generations?
I don't know. You know how generations are. A lot of them do not want to do what you and I do.
Well, that is true.
A lot of people, if you told them you had to get out there and, you know, weed the garden, they'd just, you know, they'd probably faint.
That's hard work. Nuh-uh.
It's hard work, and a lot of people nowadays don't want any hard work.
No, no, they want it easy.
That's it. They want an easy deal. And, you know, they talk to all those little school children about bees and all this. And so, and germinating them and what each thing serves. And so, you know, I'm just really impressed if somebody left that's even doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to know where all our food and where all these things come from and how they get there. They don't just, like you say, don't just end up at a grocery store just by magic. There's a lot of man hours that go behind it, a lot of work, a lot of sweat and tears. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big process to get things from a little seed or someplace in the ground to the grocery store, and it's not always that as convenient as what it looks.
Yes, and they have no idea. They see all those vegetables laying there. They see strawberries and all this, and they go, that's nice. We'll take some. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I mean, fall is such a wonderful time of year. You know, people have worked hard all year long, and this is the beginning of a great time of year where you just kind of enjoy the fruits of your labor, kind of sit back, relax a little bit, spend some time with family, slow down a little bit, and really this is just the beginning of the next, what, 2.5 months or so where we can do that. And then we'll kick it back into high gear in January. But yeah, enjoy the next few months. Enjoy the holiday season.
That's right, and it's the best time of year. It really is. It's a great time of year to do so many things that slow us back down a little bit.
Exactly, yeah. And it all starts with Halloween. You know, you go to, as kids, go trick-or-treat or trunk-or-treat or whatever you like to do. You know, you create those memories with the whole family, mom, dad, maybe grandparents if possible, take them trick-or-treating and all that. And then they can look back on that and hopefully pass that down to their kids as well.
That's right. So it's just a good time to make a lot of good memories.
Yeah, it really is. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So we were talking earlier about how people, you know, sometimes are a little bit scared of the stock market. We remember what happened in 2008. And so people may be looking for a, for lack of a better term, a safer way to invest, a safer way to grow their money. Now, obviously, a life settlement is not without risk. There are three major risks, and you always talk about them, and they're very important. I know we hit this every week, but it's super important for people to know because we talk about how wonderful of an opportunity this is, not only for, you know, financial reasons, but also for people's sanity, you know, and their anxiety. but there is and I don't want to say a downside, but there's three risks.
Yes, there is. And the biggest risk is it could go over. You know, you think it's a 24-month. It may not be. There may be something the doctors missed on the cancer. There may be something that just, you know, didn't show up that we didn't know about. So that is the biggest risk. It could happen, and you think it's going to happen in 24. It might not. It might be another year or 2 years. So you always have to think about that, be prepared for it, and know what it's going to cost you. It may cost you another $2,000. It may even cost $3,000.
You still get your money. It just may be a little late, and there may be some premiums involved.
Yes. So I feel like it may cost you a little bit, but you're still going to make a profit.
Yeah.
And over the years, everybody has always made a profit. The only time they have not made a profit is on those old people that we talk about every once in a while.
Exactly.
And we still have three of those policies that we need, and, oh, my gosh, I need them to come due. I need them to mature, okay?
Yeah, well, and the thing is with that is, and I know we've talked about these before, what these are life insurance policies from elderly people that you had bought a long time ago. You had some bad information. You took some people's words and they were dishonest. None of this happens anymore. But there's a big difference from what you found out between being elderly and being sick.
That's right. These elderly people who we love are not sick. They're just old.
Yeah.
So we didn't know that. We bought those policies, and they we're still waiting on three of them. And it's expensive. If the people had told us about this, we wouldn't have bought them.
Yeah.
But we've got to get rid of those three before we'll be completely out of the woods on it, okay?
And then that's never happening again.
Never. It hadn't happened since, let me tell you.
So the policy could go over, and then what are the other two risks?
The other one is it is not liquid during that time. So you may have a 24-month policy, and you decide you need some money. You cannot go and get the money out of this. But our people all know that because most of these are IRAs. And if you have an IRA, you would not want to ever take money out of it anyway. Because if you did, there is a penalty if you're less than 59 years of age, and then you have to pay tax on it also. So you don't want to pay 20% penalty and taxes. Our people all have emergency money, so that will not happen to them, thank goodness.
So they know that they can't get to
the IRAs, no.
They can't get to that, but there's plenty of money because you make sure that people are accredited before they get into the program. There are certain criteria, I guess, to be able to do a life settlement type of program. We'll get into that in just a second. What, real quick, though, before we do, what's that third risk?
The third risk is a life insurance company ever went broke. And we've never had one in Texas go broke. So we're not worried about that. The companies that we buy from are like $5 billion or $10 billion. They're big, big companies. And they're A-rated and sometimes double and triple A-rated. So we're watching that, and we look them up. Every time a policy is presented to us, are they what we need? Do they have the A rating? Do they have the double A rating? If they're a B rated, we can't even talk to them. They're not even allowed to.
Okay, so there's a lot of security measures in place to make sure that you know everything is buttoned up real nice. Everything is, you know, meets the requirements, and so there's a lot of checks and balance systems.
Yes, there is, and there has to be, and we wouldn't have it any other way. So we're thankful for that. There's really not any other great risks. Those are the three risks that we worry about.
Which really, when you look at the grand scheme of things, it's really, I mean, the risks are very small when you weigh, you know, the risks versus the benefits. And so while nothing is ever risk-free, this is about as good as it's going to get as far as, you know, weighing the risk against the benefits.
That's exactly right. And the benefits are great. And if everybody would go and look it up and see what everybody's made the last 2 years, they'll say, oh, yeah. They see how many came in early, how many came in late. And if they, you know, have any concerns, they can talk to us about it. But I love the way it works. I love it because we can say, okay, this is a 24-month policy. You're going to make 24%. In other words, you make 1% a month is what we pay. And you know going in that that's how much you'll get. It's not like, well, we might pay this much or we might pay that much. I think we pay more than a lot of the companies do. I know the mutual fund companies don't pay as much as we do.
Mm-hmm. And people can also...
They pay them 8%, and that's it.
Really? So it's just... So there is no 12%. There is no 30%.
No, not with a mutual fund company.
Yeah, yeah.
The ones I know about, anyway.
So these pay more. You basically know about, roughly speaking, when it's going to pay off. So basically, it's just here's what I'm going to get. I just have to sit and wait and be patient.
That's exactly right. It's just a matter of time.
Okay, cool. Well, that's a win-win for everybody, because I know a lot of people who have spent years getting up in the middle of the night, going online, checking to see if they have anything at all left, because it could get wiped out in a blink of an eye. They don't know when anything's going to do. They don't know how much they're going to make. It could go up. It could go down. They could lose. But with a life settlement, it's much better on your nerves and for your anxiety.
That's exactly right. And so you don't have as much pressure as you do. You're under a lot of pressure when you have 100% in stocks.
Set it and forget it. Go about live your life.
Yeah. I mean, anything can happen if you've got 100% in stocks. When it goes down, sometimes it's a lot.
And people can also feel good about the types of policies that they're investing in as well, because these are stage four cancer. It's like we were talking about a minute ago. You don't invest in these elderly policies. There's plenty of people who want to sell their policy just because they're old and they want to go travel and they want to, you know, do whatever. Plenty of other companies to buy that. That's fine. That's good. We wish them the best. But this is something completely different. And the policies that you're bidding on are very, very targeted.
Yes, I mean, everybody knows which kind of cancer policies I'm after for my clients, because it's really important, because I know which ones are going to come due faster than the others, and if we get the opportunity, we're going to buy them.
Yeah. And so you're looking at stage four cancer, and you know that, and we all know how serious cancer is. It's a very serious diagnosis. Stage one, obviously, we hope that they recover, and a lot of times stage one diagnoses are able to be fought, and you can beat that kind of diagnosis. But when you get to stage four, we obviously hope for the best, but we know the reality. The research is there. The numbers are there. And so we know that when somebody is diagnosed with stage four, it generally, there's an exception here and there, but it generally is, the inevitable is going to happen. At that point, cancer treatments are very expensive, and when somebody receives a stage four diagnosis, they need to sell it because they need the quick cash to take the treatments or settle their estate or whatever the deal may be, whatever their reasons are, but they need to sell it. And so when they sell it, that's when you come in, you bid against other companies to get awarded these policies, and then it becomes an investment opportunity.
That's exactly right. And so for our clients, it is a great investment opportunity, and we've done it and shown it that it works over and over and over again. And that's why I love doing it, because it doesn't have the risk of the stock market. And it is risk, but it's a different type of risk.
Yeah. And people can see, I mean, you've got the historical data there, back years, where people can actually go onto your website, see what people are making, see for themselves. These are real hardcore numbers. Your website, by the way, is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go on there and see the numbers for themselves. So if people are at that point where it's like, this makes a lot of sense. I've been destroying my nerves, my anxiety. I'm not making the money I need to make. I'm getting close to retirement. I really need to start getting a little bit more conservative with my wealth growth, and this might be the time to do it. So what should somebody do today before they call you to make an appointment to come see you?
Well, they need to get all their investment portfolio together, and then we can look at it together. Whether it's CDs, whether it's stocks, whether it's mutual funds, whether it's other types of investment, whatever it is, we need to sit down and look at it and see what they really want to do. How much money are you going to need for retirement? Then we have to see if we can get there. How much interest can we get them in order to make this?
So you put everybody on a specific plan for their specific needs.
That's exactly right. It's not one size fits all.
Cool. Awesome. All right, Faye, one last time for people to make the appointment. Now, keep in mind, it's Saturday, so nobody's at the office right now. So if you call, you're going to get a voicemail, leave a message, and Faye will call you back. Otherwise, call on Monday or even Tuesday, and you can sit down and talk to people. So one last time, what's your phone number?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.